Hello, this is Richard Outram, and welcome to the Prepare for Growth podcast series, bite-sized wisdom for leadership and personal development. So thank you for taking time out to join me. I'm so grateful for this unique opportunity. Okay, and in this week's podcast, I'm thrilled to introduce Dom Farnan, founder and CEO of Dot Connect, a conscious connection agency, an Inc. 5000 company, founded in 2011. As a conscious leader, Dom refuses to think in the limiting terms that have been so pervasive in the corporate world. She pulls from her journey of a merely surviving workaholic culture to thriving, shattering the belief that high performance has to cost inner peace. Her clients include Vizio, NFL, TikTok, Schlumberger, Gap, and Samsung Next. Dom is also founder and chief conscious connector at Dose Connect. It's a first of a kind talent company solely focused on psychedelic therapeutics and is a conscious leader and performance coach. Dom holds a BA in organizational leadership, Brandman University, and an inner MBA at New York University. Dom is author of a new book, which was actually launched last week. Congratulations, Dom.
Thank you.
Called Now Here, A Journey from Toxic Boss to Conscious Connector. And Dom's wisdom bite for this episode is a similar title, From Toxic Boss to Conscious Connector. Dom, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. This is going to be awesome. What a great topic and a fabulous, inspirational journey of yours.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm excited.
And did you want to add anything else to the introduction, Dom?
Yeah, I will add that I'm a joyful, free, passionate woman.
Oh, that's awesome. I love it.
Thank you.
But a beautiful smile. Wonderful. Okay. All right. In typical fashion, Dom, we have three segments to the podcast session. What have you learned? What would you change? And what are you grateful for? And then we have a quick round. Okay.
Does that work? Yeah. Let's do
it. Awesome. Okay. So on the what have you learned segment, let's start with how did you make the transition from toxic entrepreneur to a conscious connector?
Yeah, it started really to come out in COVID. So before 2020, I spent a lot of time on the road for my business, and I was always visiting clients and, you know, true workaholic, working weekends, doing events, all kinds of things, making myself very busy. And I loved being busy. And then in COVID, I didn't have any travel and I was home, and it was very confronting. Like, oh, okay, this is what it's like to be around my kid and my husband all the time. Okay, this is interesting. I don't know how I feel about this. And it was challenging because at the same time, our company was a recruiting, you know, is a recruiting company. And in COVID, there wasn't a lot of hiring happening. So, you know, we started the year off coming in hot, thinking we're going to make a ton of revenue. And then March, everything shut down. And overnight, we were losing business. And that was very shocking to my system. And in that shock to my system, also being grounded at home in New Jersey at the time, I started just to go inward and contemplate, like, why do I not feel joy and feel happiness and feel peace despite externally like having it all and showing up in a way to fit the label of CEO or, you know, doting mother or any of those things. And at that point, like that led me to sit with this and go, yeah, I'm kind of tired of how I feel. And the only person who can help me with that is me. So it was a big light bulb moment with like, nobody's coming to save me. I got to do this on my own. And so I got curious. I saw a friend of mine who had a coach that he was working with on Instagram, and he was in the middle of his own COVID stuff. And I'm like, I don't know. He seems like he's really like holding it together despite all this chaos. Maybe coaching is something I should inquire about. I had done talk therapy before. I had done a lot of different things and it didn't feel like that was what I wanted at the time. So coaching seemed like a good avenue to explore. Even though I didn't really have the money, I made an investment in myself to really take action in my healing because I was done. I was just done feeling the way that I felt. I didn't know that it would lead me on this windy road of the journey that I've been on for the last 3+ years. but I'm so grateful for all of it. And even now I'm in this other period of my life and my business and all of it. And I've got these tools that I'm really having to lean on for this next third mountain challenge that I'm, you know, immersed in right now. Similar business stuff happening in the market right now and different things happening in my marriage and my life. And so it's just, you know, it was just starting with that one little step and not really predicting the outcome, just saying, hey, I'm going to do this one thing first and be open to seeing what else shows up on the path.
Absolutely. And I tell you, Dom, thank you for your vulnerability and courage. I've listened to a couple of your other interviews and it's just tremendous, tremendous courage. So thank you for that. So at the Conscious Leadership Mastermind, something happened. What shifted your mindset?
Yeah, I think what shifted my mindset was for me taking responsibility. Like, it's not anyone else in my company that is toxic. It is me. It's me. And I was like, it dawned on me. I'm like, whoa, okay. Didn't see that one coming. Like, I couldn't make sense of why things weren't working in certain areas. And then I had to take a minute and like put the mirror up and go, ah, maybe it starts with you because you are the leader. And so that was kind of shocking to my system. I also think within Conscious Leaders Mastermind and Leaders Create Leaders, my coach Gerard Adams, the work that we did was unlike any other work I've done. So it was a lot of like deep healing, somatic work, breath work, things like that, that normally in business, you may not go do something like that and understand the impact that'll have on you as a leader. When you do healing work like that, at least my experience has been, it's created a lot more capacity to let light in and to forgive myself, to forgive others, and let more love in. And when you have that energy and that frequency running through you, just everything starts to shift and expand and open.
And is that what you mean by, because there's a lot of talk about coming from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
Explain a little bit more for the audience. What do you mean by inside out?
Yeah. So it's, for me, I was curious and I wanted to listen to the voice that I had in my head that was kind of like, come here, like come this way, like come inside and go a little deeper and figure out who you are and why you're that way and what in your life made an impact. And this current season of life that I'm in, I'm doing a lot of inner child healing. And there's people in the woo-woo world that will get this and they understand that you kind of go back to these initial periods of life, big T or little T trauma. It doesn't have to be some huge thing, but it can be a micro trauma over time.
Yes.
That you don't address that manifests itself in your adult life. Like, if you think about it, what you're triggered by isn't necessarily you as an adult being triggered. It's like your little kid that didn't get seen or heard or whatever, that gets frustrated when someone cuts you off or like whatever the situation is. So I was really fascinated. I had a friend of mine who was reading books by Dr. Joe Dispenza and Breaking the Habit of Being Yourself. That was the first book that I read on my journey. And that I'd read it a few times. It's a bit dense, but it started to really make sense. And I felt like empowered, like, huh, I could maybe actually rewire my brain waves and I can poke around at some of these experiences in my life, take the lessons from them, work through, you know, through a breathwork session or whatever, or even a somatic screaming session. I've done that recently and it was amazing. And get that stuff out of your body. And when you do, you know, it just, there's the ripple effects that it has from starting with the inside out is so transformational. And it leads to other things because it's not just the like doing one thing. It's like, then you want to eat better. Then you want to sleep better. Then you want to really exercise more. Like, your whole mindset shifts for how you be and how you show up in the world. It all just shifts.
Absolutely. And you talk about getting to know yourself or your soul. And I assume coming from the inside out also means that was the beginning of your spiritual awakening.
Yeah, 100%. So, you know, I grew up Catholic. I went to Catholic church with my grandma. We went to mass multiple times a week. She prayed a lot. She was very devout. I was in choir. but it wasn't something I took into my adult life. I've never been opposed to organized religion. I've always believed in a higher power, God, whatever. I only recently had, you know, less restriction around even saying God. I wouldn't say that for a long time because I had an idea of some guy in a white robe somewhere in the clouds. Like, that was my childhood idea. But now I think of it as universal source energy. And I don't know. I mean, that's really my spirituality has deepened and expanded in the last 2 years. And a lot of that has been through very amazing breathwork and sound bath sessions that I've had, deep, deep meditations, and plant medicine experiences where I've felt like I've died or transcended and disassociated from my body. Mm-hmm. But sometimes in a scary way and sometimes in a not scary way, where it's like, wow, there's this expanded universal consciousness that's out there that's so beautiful and loving. And like, that is it. And I think it's been really helpful because it's softened me up to a degree and it's changed how I parent. Like, I call my son, he's a crystal kid. He's kind of like a little bit on the woo-woo spirituality side, and he's coming out about it now, which is so beautiful because I don't think as a 9-year-old, I would have said, hey, I feel connected to spirit, or I feel this, or I feel that. And he does. And it's really something I want to foster in him. So he has that compass.
I think that's beautiful, Dom. I agree with you 100% about universal consciousness and how we're all interconnected in some shape or form. I 100% agree. And to the fact that there's a higher power within that, right? And we're part of that.
Yeah.
That entire ecosystem. But, you know, what I loved, Dom, particularly is, and your insight and your self-awareness, and this is, as leaders, we all have to take a leaf from your book. It's the acceptance that, and realization that we're the problem.
Yeah, you have to take ownership.
And I don't want to use the word problem as negatively, but, you know, yeah, you've got to take responsibility for that, you know. And I think that was, that's the first place to start with. And from that, I would love to ask you, so in order to continue your path, what are your regular habits to keep you conscious?
Yeah, it's funny because once you start this, there's a lot of things that you can add on. And my friend Erica and I were talking about it. She's like, yeah, my morning routine's like 3 hours now. And I'm like, okay, I don't do that, but I do have a practice in the morning. And it generally is prayer, some form of exercise, either a walk, or I have a trainer or Pilates. Those are my go-tos. I do my journaling, which is typically like 15 minutes, which includes gratitudes and also affirmations, intention setting, goals for the day. I say my contract, which is I'm a joyful, free, passionate woman, multiple times a day. And I remind myself so I can be in that energy. I do a bit of reading, and that's my, you know, my morning practice. It's usually about an hour. It's not always perfect. It doesn't always go that way. I also just recently got sound bowls. So I play the bowls for myself or for my son in the morning. It's really beautiful. And that's been really good for my nervous system. I feel like just getting into that kind of vibe has been super helpful. And I think for me as a leader, what's been amazing is giving myself that space. Before, I used to wake up, get on my phone, get on Slack, get drama emails from clients, get in that angry kind of urgency, ridiculous hustle culture. And I fed off of that adrenaline. And then I would be in my victimhood of like, oh, my day sucked because of all these A, B, and C external things, instead of taking responsibility and having a boundary and setting me up for success and starting my day with me first and being unapologetic about that. We have a good system in our family where my husband will do the morning stuff with my son because I get my time in and my thing. And that sets me up because I have to show up for the family and be the provider and also run the company and be with my team and be with clients. And like, if I don't do my thing first, nobody gets any goodness out of me.
100%. And give us a little bit more. Is that a particular time in the morning that you get up and just have that me time?
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually like, I usually get up at 6:30.
Yeah.
I usually see my trainer Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 7 to 8. And then I'll have the rest of my practice like 8:15 to 9. I'm kind of done and ready to do my meetings by 9:30. Although sometimes I like to book in just extra quiet time. My brain doesn't really kick on until like 11 my time, but then I'm on. And yeah, I used to not get up early at all. So pre-COVID, I was happy to be on the East Coast because I slept in while the West Coast was waking up. Yeah. And that was a bad habit. I would start my days super, super late and they were kind of fumbly, you know, whatever. And it didn't really serve me. It just made me more agitated. But at the time I was addicted to that agitation and adrenaline and addicted to the drama that I was creating myself.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So shifting gears a bit, really about conscious leadership. What does conscious leadership mean to you, Dom?
Conscious leadership means to me that you are responsible and you have responsibility. So when things come your way and life happens as it does, you choose your response. Like you have a switch almost. You have that pause. You have that moment of reflection. There are a lot of unconscious people operating off of the, you know, 68 to 80,000 thoughts that are pre-programmed in their brain all day, every day, and just reacting. My dad's one of them. He's a very reactive person. And I used to be the same way. Not to say that now I'm conscious and I'm not reactive. I have my moments of reactivity. And now when I have them, I go, perfect. Okay, that's a trigger. Let's put that on the list and we can revisit like why that was triggering for me and what that's teaching me. But, you know, being a conscious leader means that you have self-awareness, you have emotional intelligence, you have depth, and you're not flying off the handle all the time. That's the difference between conscious and toxic, really. Like if you think about it, I was talking to some of my team that have now moved on to other companies recently, and they're telling me their experience of their new bosses or new leaders in their company. And it's reactive, it's emotionally erratic. That's the other piece, the emotionally erratic and just being dragged around by feelings all day is what can contribute to toxicity. I used to be this exact way. That was me. I was fully guided by my feelings. So if I felt great, it was great. And if I felt like shit, everyone was in it with me. And I was not able to control or understand or self-soothe or unpack any of this. And so my dream for my company is to really lead a team of people who are fully formed, emotionally intelligent adults who have some level of self-awareness, who understand that feelings are fleeting and they don't always have to go with whatever way the wind blows, and that they have choices and they can choose their thoughts and they can choose their responses. And when you operate from that place of strength, then you really are like un-F-withable. Like then you're just solid and who you be. And there's no doubt about it. There's no walking on eggshells of like, what am I going to get today or not?
It was beautiful. And I was listening to your words and you said who you be rather than who you are. That's fantastic. Because this is about who you're being, right? And part of this, Dom, I think is, and this is always very difficult for us, it's, you know, are you able to kind of pause in the moment and truly understand where your triggers are, where your emotional capital may be, and your impact on others? It's very difficult in the heat of business to be able to do that. Tell us, are you able to, in the heat of the moment, are you able to take a step back, you know, kind of understand yourself and objectively look at the situation?
Not always. Right. But way more than ever in my life. So there's probably 80% of the time when I'm really, really embodied as a true conscious leader. And the other 20% of the time is my work. That's why I'm still doing this work. Like that is my imperfection, my humanness, my stresses, my all of it. And, you know, I'll give you an example. I had a very triggery conversation last night with my husband. And I didn't feel great about it. And I realized it was fully just me and my feelings. Like he said something, I responded. I was like, ah, then I felt not great. And then this morning, old me would have just acted like nothing happened, made coffee, moved on, and swept it under the rug. New me owned my reaction, apologized, helped him understand like how I felt, where I was coming from, and, you know, committed to do better next time. So there's also that, you know, it's not a foolproof system, but I think there's now an opportunity to give yourself some grace as well, because there's a lot of factors that weigh into when people are in react mode. And oftentimes it's actually most all the time, it's never about you. You know, like in my world of recruiting, we get projected on if a candidate doesn't want to take a job, if the hiring manager doesn't like them, there's all these things all day just thrown out in our world. And it's never about us. And so a lot of this work has really helped me to the term that Seth Godin uses in one of the courses I took all MBA was to seek Sonder, to understand that everyone has their own dynamic, conflicted, challenging, beautiful, you know, layered life as a human being, and to meet them there and not foreshadow it with, you know, whatever projection of it you're seeing, you know, like really a true acceptance of people for everything, for all their flaws and all their greatness.
Beautifully said. Wow. Beautifully said. That is really, really nicely said. I had a line because I'm, you know, on the movement of conscious capitalism and conscious leadership, as you know, this is, you know, the mission of this podcast. And I search for what is the best way, what's the best one liner to encapsulate what it all meant. And I think I found one, which was bring in one's whole self with total awareness to leadership positions.
Yeah, I love that. The whole self is huge. I mean, that's the thing that I set out when I started my work with Angie, my first coach, was I wanted to be one Dom. I just said, I don't want to be work Dom and home Dom and mom Dom and this. I want to just be one in, that's it. I don't want to have all these masks I have to wear. It's exhausting. And it was really exhausting after 20 years in corporate. So I'm still working on that because there are different sides, but the more you're committed to your practices and you're devoted to yourself, the easier it is to show up in your wholeness. And the more energy you get back from the universe, you know, for showing up that way in your true authenticity, it's like amazing what the world gives you back when you're like that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's bridge the gap now, because I'm sure there's some listeners that conscious leadership. I mean, but how in reality, what does that mean for business and society? So, and you can speak from this firsthand, how does conscious leadership improve business results?
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you, in my book, this is what we talk about, because it's my journey from being toxic, which doesn't just eliminate overnight. I started a journey and then I was on this windy road, and I'm still on the road 3 years later almost. And what happened when I really went deeper with my inner work, when I really went deeper with some of these practices like breath work, like sound healing, like deeper meditation, like plant medicine, all of that just opened my mind up and my heart up. And I was able to bring that to my team. And the best compliments I get from them is that my energy's changed. Like my vibe is different. And with that, through leading from my heart instead of my mind all of the time, I'm able to get to know people on a deeper level, understand their goals and dreams, and create opportunities for them within my company that feels like a calling and not a career or a job or a thing. They feel aligned with a mission that we're here to bring consciousness to corporate, to change, and to be the lighthouse. Initially, I set out on this journey and I wanted all the clients we had to be conscious and be like me and be aligned. That's really hard to do. We have 10 clients right now and most of them are conscious, and it's a beautiful thing because we can have hard conversations from a heart-centered place and nobody gets pissed off. We can have feedback. Like, feedback used to be real triggery for me, and now I'm like loving it. Let's talk about feedback. Let's give and receive. And that has shifted. While I was going through my journey, my company grew 222%. And I wasn't really in my company directing and doing and all of this. I was the culture champion. I was the brand ambassador. I was committed to my work and my inner work and my healing. And that manifested through my team resonating with that and showing up for themselves. And so I brought some of these things. We would do breathwork on Zoom. We did community service and beach cleanups. We spent time together in person, even doing breathwork ceremonies. We talk about microdosing and mental health. Like, these are things that I foster within my company, and everybody has their own choices. Nothing is forced. You show up if you want to do the breathwork or you don't. But the people who it does really resonate with, those are the ones that are expanded. Some of them aren't even here. I had a guy that was on my team that did breath work and said after that session, it changed his life. He wanted to go start his business and be in his community and build companies in Africa and like just go do his thing. And I thought that was beautiful. And I'm like, yeah, go do it. You do you. Love you. Thank you for all your work while you're here. But like, that's your dream and I'm going to support you in that.
Right. So Doma, we're going to have listeners who are the analytical type and they're going to say, okay, so what's the ROI? Could you, that significant growth period that you led, and I know it's continuing. How would you identify, link that to the real business results? I mean, you've changed the culture. It seems like a very beautiful culture. People are rowing in all the right direction. You're coming from the heart. How would you link that now to potentially over 200% revenue in your business?
I would say that it's important not only to invest in your own inner work as a leader, but invest in your team.
Yeah.
Like investing in your team and your leaders and getting them the resources and tools that they need, both on the skill level and on the emotional level, is key. And so you can't have one without the other. You know, that's the end. That's the end of it. Like you have to. I keep thinking we invested probably over $1 million last year on my team's development. And I don't look at it now when we're in a challenging economic time and go, damn, I wish we didn't do that. And half of the team doesn't even work here anymore. And I'm going, yeah, I'm so blessed that we did that, because they will know when they worked here, it was the best environment. And it will stick with them. And now in their careers, they can go and work in all these places and know what isn't for them. Right. And they'll know, like, it's like setting the bar.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So what is your superpower, Dom? And is there a before and after, you know, before your journey and after, did your superpower change? But
yeah, I mean, I think my superpower has always been my ability to connect the dots forward. And really, I didn't realize I was a visionary until I was in my company. I didn't think of myself in that term. I never even heard the term. Now that I'm in a business, in a visionary seat, I look back at my career and go, wow, I've always been like this. I've always been looking at opportunities. And I was talking to my parents about this last night at dinner. You know, throughout my career, I always said yes. I was putting my hand up. I was moving around the world and around the country. I was taking opportunities. I moved my family to New Jersey, my Australian surfer husband to New Jersey for an opportunity before I really expanded the business. And that's my superpower, is really just looking at how to weave all these dots that I've collected in my career and connect them forward. And it's not just experience, it's people. It's, you know, always thinking like, hey, I meet one person, you might not be the right person for this role, but I love you for that company, team, person, whoever. So I'm always just coming from that place. And it's hard to duplicate. There's not many people on my team that have that, but I've articulated it through just saying magic. Like, I had a friend of mine probably 10, 15 years ago, and he's like, what's your, like, how do you do it? And I said, I can't really put it into words. It's kind of like magic. Like, all of these things happen that I see in my head, and then it comes to fruition and I experience it, but I don't know how to describe that to people. At one point, my initial team, my small, like, OG team, there's 10 of us, I had us all made rings that said magic, because we brought the magic to all of the clients that we had. And that's the only way I can describe it.
Got it, got it. Okay. So we're gonna go a bit deeper now in terms of toxic cultures, because this is a big topic, right? I've been, associated with many, many companies, from startups all the way to ones in declines. And in my journeys, I've seen some very, very toxic cultures, very toxic C-level executive teams. And just like many books will say, Pat Lencioni in particular would say, it starts here, and the health of that group permeates throughout the entire business, right? Whether you realize it or not. So, how do senior leaders create a toxic corporate culture?
I think they don't have trust. They don't have trust within themselves, really, and in their ability. So they turn to be micromanagers. They turn to be helicoptering in and out. They don't trust their teams. They don't communicate well. I mean, I think back, like that's the feedback I got when I was not in my consciousness. And again, it's not perfect. I'm not fully, resolved from a lot of those things. I find when I'm stressed out, I go to micromanagement. I go peek on the Slack channels and see who I can, talk to and get the updates from. And I know that is my toxic trait. And I'm like, oh, don't do that. Like, I'll tell my COO, if you see me poking around on Slack, stop me, because it's just like an innate thing and I need to not go back to that place. You guys don't want me there. I'm not good there. It's not good for anybody. But I think a lot of people just have no clue. This is what they grew up in. There wasn't like, there's not conscious leadership school. There are groups, but in reality, I didn't even know this existed. I thought this was normal because this is what I saw. I recruited for 450 different companies when I was consulting. And it was the same. We made a joke. It was like, different name, same game. That was it, really.
In my travels, I'll tell you three that I came across consistently, Dom, and for the audience, it would be scattered priorities. All right, that will lead to toxicity, unhealthy rivalries, typically at the C level. All right, I've been at the C level for decades now, and I've seen that time and time again. And then unproductive conflicts,
Yeah, no, totally. I in one area of my book, I give an example of using the clearing method to have a feedback conversation with a client, and it worked and it was beautiful. And to your point, like there could have been unhealthy conflict or no resolution of conflict. Like there's a lot of people who avoid conflict. I'm typically a conflict avoider, but now with the tool of using a clearing method and actually writing a script and doing a meditation, visualizing the outcome that I want and getting in that energy and changing the language that I use, that has expanded me in so many different ways and really been able to get through some challenging periods of time with clients.
And for those C-level, executives or CEOs, et cetera, are probably unaware that the culture is toxic. What would you say are the symptoms of a toxic culture?
I think lack of trust. I think lack of results. Like when, to your point, if you have scattered priorities and nobody knows what they're doing, nobody's doing anything. You're not all moving to the same beat of the drum. I think drama, lots of drama and like petty energy draining conversations that aren't contributing to the results. I think with senior leaders in particular and C-suite, I think about it like ego-led conversations. That's the main thing about doing inner work and healing and all of this stuff is really being able to be friends with your ego. And I've named my ego, her name is Ursula, and when she comes out, it is not pretty. And my, like my happy place is that I want to be like my octopus teacher. I want to be like this beautiful octopus that doesn't talk, that you learn so much from, that you're so in love with. If you've seen that movie, this guy is like so enamored by this creature and understands it on an energetic level. That's my vibe that I aspire to be, instead of in my Ursula vibes, who's also an octopus and who's black and purple and not very nice.
That's funny. That's awesome. I love that. I have a few, and this is kind of really important for probably the more non-self-aware folks who are listening to this, you know, and I've seen this. I've seen companies going through growth spurts. I've been involved at a certain stage, and I've also been in turnaround situations where they're in decline. And this is exactly what you see when you walk in there. If you want to plug into a culture and understand really where the issues are and the reasons why potentially financial results, for example, don't show the outcomes that you want, these are the reasons that I will rattle off. Communication decreases. You typically find that. Criticisms and blame increases, right? Yeah. Respect decreases. Isolation increases. Focus turns inwards rather than outwards. You're less innovative, mm-hmm. right? You don't go out there and really understand what the opportunities and the world is bringing. Rifts widen and inequities grow.
Yeah.
Aspirations diminish. Initiative decreases. I mean, people don't want to take on projects, and negativity spreads.
Yeah.
If people can take a step back and say, okay, if I was to do, you know, just do a fact check on what's going on in my culture and really understand objectively what's going on, because we're all blind, we've all got blind spots, we don't see it, or maybe we don't want to see it. Those are some of the symptoms that you see that companies headed probably to a very, very dark place, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one thing that's been so beautiful in the last year with my company, after this massive year of growth we had, now we're in a contraction type of business, and we've had to bench a lot of people. Some people have left and moved on. Like, we've had to do a lot of things to stay afloat at the moment. And I have literally 50 people who want to come back, will work for us for free, will volunteer, are staying on our alumni Slack and WhatsApp chat, who connect with us, who pray for us, who want to bring us work, who want us all to be together again. And that goes to show what it's like when you have that level of consciousness within your culture, because most people are on LinkedIn getting laid off, lighting their employers up and mad and angry and feel slighted and will never work for these people again and writing the reviews and yada, yada. We didn't have that. We had to have so many hard conversations basically from like September to now, one thing after another of conversations, kind of navigating this economic environment that many other conscious leaders are in as well. We're all in this. We all are feeling this in our respective worlds. And we did it with ease and grace. And I was sitting back looking at my team going, wow, I'm really proud of my leadership team for doing this in such a way that we didn't have this, like, you know, residual or like this, you know, awful kind of implosion. We've been able to have the conversations we need to have in a beautiful way and hope that we'll all be back together at some point or look a little different. But, you know, we still have this cohort of people that are rooting for us, which is huge.
Absolutely. Last point on the toxic culture, I'm going to come off it. What's your playbook for fixing a toxic culture?
Starting with you. You're a leader of people. You're not even C-suite. Start with yourself. Worry about yourself. Don't worry about anybody else but you. And just see, when you commit to your work, your inner work, what happens through dedication, devotion, consistency, discipline over time. There's not a magic pill. This is a commitment. It's a lifestyle commitment and a choice that you make every day.
And so your daily habits as a person, as Dom, basically translates to Dom as a leader. I mean, there isn't a different set of daily habits, for example, as a leader, potentially, compared to a daily set of habits as Dom, the person.
Yeah, no, totally. It's like I said to my dad, how you do one thing is how you do everything, right? It starts with, do you make your bed? If you don't, like, my husband does not make the bed. I make the bed. There's huge differences there. And I'm trying to get my son to start making his bed so that I don't, like, you know, his girlfriends in 10 years don't hate me for having this slobby, not bed-making kid.
And it's amazing, Dom. It's the little things, if I was to go on the side of, you know, what are daily habits or just momentary habits of a leader? It's the little things that don't cost anything.
It's 100%. My coach told me, hey, you know, a life hack, get out and walk for 30 minutes every day with no podcast playing, just listening to sounds or instrumental music. And yeah, he made me do that. He's like, that's what you got to do. Number one thing.
And it's even our daily interactions with our teams, right? It's the thank you. Just thank you. Looking them in the eye and saying the hello and a little bit about your family. Those are the little things that don't cost big bonuses at the year end that really matter.
Yeah, 100%.
The fabric of the organization, you know?
We have a Slack channel for wins and kudos and shout outs, and we have happy files on ourselves. So if we get good feedback from clients or candidates, we'll screenshot it and share it with each other so we can praise each other. Especially as a leader of people, your job is to really ensure the team is supported through their skills and their behaviors, and they're growing in those areas. But you have to be the cheerleader, and you got to do it 100 times more than you think you have to do it. So one thank you a week isn't enough. It needs to be all the time. That was a huge takeaway for me just in life. One of my coaches was like, how many times do you tell your husband you love him? I'm like, I don't know. He knows I love him. I don't have to say this all the time. And he's like, you need to say it a lot, and you need to say it to your team, and they need to know, like, you need to do it 100 more times than you think. I'm like, oh, okay. Got it. Simple though.
It is simple. Absolutely. All right. Switching gears to the next segment. What would you change in any area of life, not just business?
I think for me, I'm on the quest for a peaceful life. And right now I have a lot of challenges and lessons and things that continue to show up. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult to not feel in my victimhood a little bit and go like, why me? Why is this happening or keep happening or still happening or things like that? But I'm on the quest for peaceful life, and I think I would just change, like, having more patience. You know, initially I came in hot with this healing journey and had a list of all the things I was going to heal and tick off my list and then move to the next thing, and then I'll be healed. It's not like that. It is totally ebbs and flows, and it is, you're in it and then you're out of it, and then you heal something and something else pops up like whack-a-mole. Like, it is all about the journey. So really finding peace with being in the present moment on your journey, giving yourself grace. I'm like really hard on myself, so I'm not healed enough. You know, it's always not enoughness. And so really being able to sit with and be with the process that I'm in. I'm in another hard process right now, and I don't want to rush it. I want to really, like, get through the ebbs and flows of this, because that's where my healing comes in. You know, I'm like, wrote this book 3 years ago, well, 3 year journey. And now I'm like, wow, I'm reflecting a lot on this 3 years. And it felt like it went by in a blink, but I also remember everything that felt long and difficult and painful. And so I think for me, it's just patience, acceptance, presence. Yeah.
All the peace. That's wonderful.
Yeah.
And then ultimately to peacefulness, which we all aspire towards. Wonderfully said. Thank you, Dom. What are you grateful for in any area of life, not just business?
Yeah, I'm grateful for the house that I live in Laguna Beach. It's beautiful. I'm grateful for my son. I'm grateful for my family and their support. I'm grateful for my team and my friends. I'm grateful for my coaches and having the best mentors and people who look up to me and challenge me to continue to grow. I'm grateful for my inner guidance. I'm grateful for my grandma. You know, she's the one who I dedicated my book to, in addition to my son. And I was thinking about her this morning, and I hope to be how she was for me. I hope to be somebody who's like that cheerleader that you didn't know that you needed, because she was just so like that for me. I could do anything and she would be like, yes, you got it. You're going to do it. This is the best. And having that, I think, gave me the motivation to constantly be striving for something next and better and more and bigger and all of this. But at the same time, I'm in this season now where all of the things I don't want, I'm like just really happy and content with, you know, being in the peaceful energy and being at my house and like just not constantly striving. I told my parents last night, I don't want to grow this big, huge company. I did 2 years ago. I was on this full trajectory. Now I'm like, you know what? I want a lifestyle business. I want more time. I don't want more money at all. I want freedom of my time and of like wanting to do what interests me and being able to be of service and create more impact through that.
You're on your fourth mountain, Dom. Sounds like you're on your third or fourth mountain. That's fantastic.
So yeah, thank you.
You aspire for the same thing. Wonderful. Okay, how is Dot Connect changing the recruiting industry? This is, by the way, this is a quick round. How is it changing the recruiting industry? And I wanted to, as part of that, Dom, I really want to kind of hone in on, you talked about mission and you know, as you're building a culture, people have got to be behind a mission, and it's not just about making money.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, when you're hiring, you know, the more younger generations, they go into businesses and they're looking for something that the company represents, some type of purpose. So that's part B, but part A, how is DC changing the recruiting industry?
Yeah, I mean, I would say when people ask me that question or how we're different, I say that we care. I know it sounds like really basic, but apparently there's a lot of recruiting companies out there where people don't care. They're sloppy. They're not really getting into your business as a client. They don't understand you as a human, as a candidate, as a, you know, talented person. And so for us, we lead with heart and intention, and we care, and we want to get to know people. Like, we got feedback from a client yesterday that said, I've never worked with a recruiting company that asks so many good questions and spends so much time really trying to understand our business and the talent we're going for. Perfect. That's how we do it differently, because that's exactly how we show up. So I always like to tell my team that I want anyone who engages with us, candidates or clients, to walk away experiencing something different. They have a feeling about us. They go, that felt really good. That felt different. I feel seen. I feel understood. I feel valued. And I feel like they're working for me, alongside me in partnership. And that's important, though. I had a conversation with a client the other day. We were negotiating, and I said, look, I'm super flexible on the pricing, but I won't negotiate if you're not values aligned. Like, this is more important to me than this fee or this or that. Like, you have got to be understanding your role in this partnership. Like, we're not just a vendor that you're going to throw a bunch of stuff over the fence and then we just do it like admin robots. That's not how we operate. Like, we need to be in it with you. You need to understand your role. We understand ours, and we come together, and that's where the magic happens.
That is beautiful. So again, in my travels, when we're kind of in the interview process and the recruiting process, you know, clearly, you know, there's got to be a competency fit and experience and all that kind of good stuff. But when you get down to the values, is there a fit in values? And as though, you know, one of the differentiators at Dot Connect is you're trying to align to the values of your client, who's the company, the employer, and the candidate. When you go down the path of interviewing candidates, how do you know from a value standpoint that they're going to be a fit?
Yeah, I mean, I know that my team's asking them, A, have they seen what our mission, vision, and values are, and what do they think of them? Like, we actually ask them, what do you think? And how do you feel like you can best represent or live those values in your daily life? Because this is what we do. These are the expectations, and that resonates with you or it doesn't. And if it doesn't, cool, no harm, no foul. Best of luck somewhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and that's been something that we've learned and we're iterating. We've thought a lot about that. We made a lot of fast hires last year. We were over 100 people at one point. And I'll tell you right now, I wouldn't bring 50% of them back.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not values aligned. We were going quick. We were going fast. We were growth at all costs. We were excited. Everyone was making money. Like, it was a really interesting time. And now that we've been able to contract a bit, we've done a big retrospective on the year and said, well, what do we don't want? Like, what wasn't working? Where do we cut corners? Where do we not show up in alignment with our values because of pressure from the client, which also leads to the client not being aligned to our values, you know? So we've done a lot of work around that and getting very honest with ourselves. Even last year when we started growing, I had told my COO, I'm not going to put a revenue target number on us for the year. I just want to see let's just grow organically and let's see how far we can take this. I want us to focus on the team and the culture and skills and soft skills and inner work and all of that for the team. Because to your point earlier, the earlier career folks you know, this is many of their first time working ever. So we had to work through the kinks of that, of like, how do you show up for work on Zoom? Cause you're remote. How do you show up and how do you do your job, and what language do you use, and how do you show up with clients, and how does it, you know, really, how do we get them inspired and excited to like live the mission, live the values, and embody that?
Absolutely. And you've got mindfulness and a growth mindset is two of your key core values at Dot Connect. Explain a bit further.
Yeah, I think for mindfulness, I think about really being mindful of yourself, your energy that you bring, and how that impacts others, and then seeking Sonder and understanding others' energies as well. I do a lot of coaching with my team around, you know, reframing projections. You know, my junior recruiters, if a candidate hangs up on them or a hiring manager yells at them or snaps or whatever it is, they'll freeze and go into panic mode, or they'll think it's about them. And none of that stuff is about them. It took me 20 years to figure out it's not all about me. It's about these people's situation and their stuff. So all we can control is our response, our interpretation, and detaching. Like, I took everything personal when I was recruiting myself. You know, I took every decline, like, I'm a bad recruiter because this candidate doesn't want the job. No, I'm not. Or I'm a bad recruiter because that hiring manager didn't like that candidate, so that must mean that I'm not good. So there was a lot of like learning about that, and really being able to share that wisdom with my team so that they don't, you know, live from that vantage point, like this more like new age way of thinking. And we do a lot of mindset work and reframing and being able to, you know, have control of our emotions so that we're not sucked into it. When you're in an energy draining environment, you can't show up your best. So it's been, you know, a lot of conversations around that. And then growth mindset, that's just me. I'm wired like that. I do all the things. I do them big. I invest. I go to all the things. Like, I'm so into learning. I could have been a teacher. I wanted to maybe be a teacher. And so that's where some of my coachiness comes out, because I love learning, and I love, for my own learning, sharing what I learn. That's why I wrote a book, because I wanted to like really relearn some stuff and then synthesize it and get it out into the world. And it's a hard value to have, because I've realized not everyone has a growth mindset. A lot of people have a fixed mindset and they're good. They know what they know. They're good. They feel good. Perfect. So it's been a struggle as a leader to get people to have that light bulb go off. But I think that's where my grandma's energy comes in. Cause it's like, look, I just kind of plant seeds. I'm here to plant seeds. I'm here to inspire you to wake up to your own power and get motivated yourself. But it's self-enrollment. You know, you can't make somebody show up a certain way. They have to feel it from within. I always felt it from within. So I followed that feeling and that calling, which led me to where I'm at. Other people, I feel my role is just to be a lighthouse, to plant the seed, to inspire and encourage them, to pump up their tires, and then see what happens.
Awesome. And in the kind of HR world, you know, we go through engagement scores and we try to test the pulse of the organization. And where I'm going with this question is, if there was anything such as like a cultural index or an engagement score in your organization, and you're changing now how you're growing the culture and you're changing the culture, how would you kind of score the effectiveness of that? Would you say that, you know, I don't know if you employ engagement scores or some type of measurement, how would you say that's kind of progressed since you've shifted focus to a more kind of conscious culture?
Yeah, I mean, we've won awards. So there's a website called Comparably where you survey your team and employees and they give you direct feedback. So we have 4 awards. We have one for best outlook, like current outlook on life and the economy. We have one for best CEO. We have one for best career growth. We have one for best workplace flexibility.
Yep.
And so that to me was a really powerful indicator directly from my team. So I loved that.
Awesome. Okay. All right. We'll run through a few here very quickly. Dom, what is the one belief or habit that's changed your life for the better?
That's a good question. I would say self-love and acceptance. Like coming to that place has really changed my life.
Wow. That is powerful. I love that. Okay. What is your advice on finding the highest version of yourself?
Start with you and get curious and go deep and do things that push you to your edge of comfort. You're not going to find out more about yourself when you're comfortable. The growth happens when you're really uncomfortable and you're doing scary stuff. I don't know if I shared with you before the story of when I climbed Machu Picchu in Peru. And I'm not a hiker. I don't like heights. That's not a hike. It's a huge climb. Nobody told me this. I didn't train for this. And I was like going up one step at a time and going, this is hard. This is weird. I don't like this. But then halfway through the hike, there's a few hours. I'm like, this is awesome. I'm doing this. Check me out. This is amazing. I love hiking. I love the nature. Da, da, da. And then I got to the top and I cried and I felt like, whoa, I just did a super scary thing I didn't think I could ever do. I did it. I loved it. I don't know if I would do it again, but I'm really proud of myself. And so to start with yourself and like get curious and go deep and explore and, you know, don't have any expectation. Just make it fun. It doesn't have to be serious. Like inner work is work, but it doesn't have to be so serious.
Congratulations on Machu Picchu, buddy. You did much better than me and my family. I tell you, we did that. But we did the van going up, you know, with the 2-lane roads and everyone driving crazy all the way up. But it was what a beautiful experience, though. Oh my God.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, yeah, it was after my first ayahuasca experience too. So it was in my integration period. So I think that's why I also probably felt super inspired and like, yeah, I could do anything because I had just done that. But yeah, I think that was just such an awakening moment.
Well done. And such a beautiful spiritual place. My God. I mean, just an amazing civilization, right?
You know? Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay. What are psychedelic therapeutics? I've heard a lot about it. There's a lot going on. My son actually has his own media company and he's doing a lot of media work for a place which does, clinical trials.
Yeah.
So it's quite fascinating to hear the stories.
Yeah.
Tell us the layman's view.
Yeah. So I think right now we're in, you know, they're calling it the third wave renaissance of psychedelics. And so, you know, there was a lot of research being done in the 60s and then that got shut down and the DEA came in and the government and they had this whole rhetoric around psychedelics and they scared everybody about drugs. And so now in the last few years, there have been a lot of different clinical trials and different substances that they're finding help to support increased mental health and wellness. And so currently ketamine therapy is legal. You can go to clinics. I think you're in Florida. They have clinics in Florida. You have at-home ketamine treatment that you can go telehealth, talk to a doctor, tell them your symptoms if you're feeling depressed or anxious or whatever your issue may be that you want to resolve. Yeah. And you know, what's in the pipeline, I would say probably in the next 5 to 10 years, we'll see the expansion of therapeutic offerings with MDMA for PTSD, for veterans, for, you know, severely mentally ill patients, also psilocybin, so mushrooms. They're actually legal in Oregon and they'll be legal in Colorado. They're legal in Vancouver. Vancouver basically eliminated all of their drug laws, so you can get anything up there. And yeah, I mean, there's other substances like 5-MeO-DMT, which is a toad venom. There's ayahuasca that's legal in different parts of the world, and that's tea that you drink. And all of that, you know, when used with intention and reverence and the proper integration afterwards, after your experience, can be deeply healing. But psychedelics aren't for everybody. And personally, I've tried all of the things. Last year was a very big experimentative year for me. And so I know what resonates with me and how I feel and what doesn't. I also know I'm very much in integration and the lessons keep coming. You know, it's almost been a year since I've done my ayahuasca and she still shows up a lot and teaches me a lot of things. So I think it's important to have the disclaimer that A, it's not for everybody. B, have a community, have resources, and have the support after that you need if you're going to go that route. But, you know, I would say don't be scared. There's enough resources out there to do a bit of research. There's a bunch of documentaries on Netflix, you know, yes. Have a Good Trip and How to Change Your Mind. Like, those are good places to start if you're completely a newbie in this space. And even my uncle right now, he's in kind of hospice care for cancer, late stage cancer, and he's microdosing mushrooms and that's helping him with pain.
Wow.
So.
Right. And now I imagine to our conversation just earlier about the alignment of values. I know you help these fairly new companies, you know, with their culture and obviously talent acquisition and so forth. So I'd imagine there's an alignment of values. As you talk about culture, you help them drive their culture positively.
Yeah, exactly. Because I think that's an opportunity for many early stage founders. When let's say you just get funding or you're self-funded, you're growing. A lot of times that culture piece will get missed. Yep. And then, you know, your culture starts to create itself.
Yep.
Instead of you leading in alignment with vision and values, and then it can get really dicey. So that's what happened with Dot and the first wave of my team was 2019. And it was just this manifestation of all these things that didn't feel good to anybody because there was no intention behind it. You know, there wasn't a person at the top of the top, but really at the bottom. Like I look at myself now at the bottom, supporting the whole ecosystem that's within my team, but there isn't that person in leadership leading the way. So I think the culture piece is very important for early stage. I mean, all stages, but particularly early.
When you're formulating, absolutely. Okay. What question have I not asked you that I should have?
That's a good question. Maybe what I'm excited about right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
What are you excited about right now?
I'm excited about my crystal bowls that I bought. I have 5 alchemy bowls that I invested in and I'm learning to play them. And I'm excited to play them for people in person. And we've had several jam sessions with my family. And I had my dad playing the drum the other night and my son playing the bowls with me. And we're like a little band. And it brings me a lot of joy. I used to play violin in school years ago. And then I tried to play guitar and I just couldn't quite find an instrument that resonated with me. And then I got the wild idea. I'm like, maybe I'll just get some bowls. Like, I love the way they sound. I go to sound bath anyways. And now I'm doing it and I'm just loving it. So I'm super excited about that.
Wonderful. That's great. That's awesome, Dom. Thank you. And, you know, the book launch occurred last week. Congratulations. That's a major accomplishment. Really well done.
Thank you.
Is there anything that we covered or we did not cover in this conversation that you want to know about, that the audience should know about your book?
I don't think so. I mean, it's just the beginning. I feel several other books emerging already. You know, this book was really true to myself and my journey in the last couple of years. And I think it's a good jumping off place for somebody who's maybe conscious, curious, and doesn't really know about a lot of things, because I talk about a lot of different tools and modalities and mindsets that you can try on and experiment with. But I think I will have another book and I'm already thinking through, like, it's probably going to be geared more towards truly building my company and what it was like to be in that, just all leadership lessons and wisdom and stories.
I think that would be great. That would be great. Last question. What is your parting advice on personal transformation to becoming a conscious leader?
Be kind to yourself.
Wow.
Be kind, be open. You know, forgive yourself and just have grace, because this is hard work and leadership is a gift and an art, and it can be learned. I believe that people are natural born leaders, but I do believe that other people can learn it. and learn the art of it. But, you know, just start with being kind to yourself, because you're not going to figure all the things out and you're not going to be perfect, even if you're conscious or not. I'm far from perfect. I mean, my mom's here this week, so that's been super fun. But she said, she's like, I thought you've been doing all this work and you seem the same. I'm like, oh, thanks. I feel different inside, but like, thank you for the feedback. So, you know, just be kind.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, Dom, thank you so much. This has been tremendous.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed this conversation. Your wisdom is way ahead of your age. I can tell.
Thank you.
That's the highest compliment. I loved your authenticity, your courage to share your story, your vulnerability, and the fact that you do a tremendous amount of self-reflection. I mean, these are all leadership lessons that we hope can permeate throughout the entire population of leaders. This is just superb. And I'm sure, Dottie, your grandmother is very, very proud of you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you as well, Dom. Thank you. This was tremendous. Really appreciate your time on this.
Yeah, I loved it.
And best of luck with the book. I'm rooting for you, and I hope it's a really good bestseller, okay?
Thank you.
Take care of yourself now. Thank you very much. Thank you. Bye-bye. And here are my key takeaways from my conversation with Dom Farnan on a journey from toxic boss to conscious connector. We learned what it means to be a conscious leader, practice self-awareness, practice responsibility at all times, and practice team centricity. We also learned how senior leaders create a toxic corporate culture, scattered priorities, unhealthy rivalries, unproductive conflicts, and the symptoms of a toxic culture. And we also learned how to fix a toxic culture. But ultimately, being a conscious leader is about finding the highest version of yourself and bringing that whole person to your leadership position. So it starts with you, and it starts with self-love and acceptance and being kind to yourself. Thank you. I hope that you found today's session valuable. If so, please follow me on Instagram @outram.richard and post your comments. Thank you again. Until the next podcast.